TV.
Have you ever watched the end of, I believe it was season 4 of the television series Breaking Bad? You know, about a high school chemistry teacher who takes up a life of crime. Anyway, at the end of season 4, there's a particular drug dealer, a famous, very powerful leader of a certain cartel. His name's Gustavo Fring, or Gus Fring. And I think it's, again, I think it's the last show of season 4. He's going to take revenge on another drug dealer who's been a longtime rival of his, a guy named Hector Salamanca, or as Gus Fring calls him, Hector Salamanca. And he's going to go into his nursing home. You see, Hector has been reduced to a wheelchair. He's an invalid. He can't talk. But this is a plot. Walter White, the chemistry teacher turned meth chemist, has planned to kill Gustavo Fring, and he's gonna use Hector Salamanca to do it. It's a very intricate plot. Gustavo Fring walks into Salamanca's nursing home, and he's going to inject a poison into his IV tubing, and the poor invalid can't do anything about it. Hector Salamanca had called the DEA, somehow conferred with the DEA as part of this plot to lure Gustavo Fring into his room to do him in. Fring walks into the room and he says, "What man talks to the DEA? No man." And I thought of that line with Clyde Pilkington. What man changes the definition of grace? No man. And I said that on my run today over and over again. What man changes the definition of grace? No man. If you're going to change the definition of grace, the tried and true, scripturally sound definition of grace, you better be coming loaded for bear. But instead, you come making false assumptions, deductive reasoning flaws, and you're assuming that the definition of a word is based on the English element? Nah. Indeed, what man? Welcome, everyone. This is Martin Zender. You're at MZTV. This is really important. Something really important has come up here. In that, in the Concordant Dictionary, in the Concordant Literal New Testament, in the dictionary in the back, I am going to be making a direct plea at the end of this video to Tony Nungesser to change the concordant definition of grace. I'm going to be getting to that. Well, isn't that important that we get the definition right? It is the unmerited favor of God. That sticks. That's true. And by understanding where Clyde has made his mistake, and to saying that this word now means joy doesn't mean the unmerited favor of God anymore, because it just makes people feel bad if we say that the favor of God is unmerited. It's becoming this politically correct, coddle the weak, don't make people feel bad thing. It's really becoming a sickening thing where we don't want to hurt people's feelings. And most of the mistakes in the Clyde Pilkington ministry is based on this: let's everybody be happy and not hurt anyone's feelings. And let's just say that families are saved no matter what. Let's just say that everyone will live happily ever together until they die of natural causes. Can't we just say that? Can't we just say that there was no flood of Noah? Because that's so violent. We know God is not violent. Can't we just say that there's no snatching away because it just separates members of families? And can't we just say that grace means joy and happiness, and there's no such thing anymore as the unmerited favor of God? Because when some people think of themselves as not meriting the favor of God, they have self-image issues, and they really become uncomfortable, and they need therapy. They need more than therapy, let me tell you. Anyway, so this is a common theme with all the mistakes of the Pilkington ministry. This is the common theme. But it's helpful to understand where the mistake is. And as the more I look into the grace of God, what an important topic. Could we be talking about anything more important? And then what man changes the definition of the grace of God? No man. Not on my watch anyway. Not on my watch. Not in a sloppy manner. Not by making mistake after mistake after mistake. You don't do that. What audacity. Indeed, what man? What manner of man? Okay. So, here's Clyde's big mistake. He assumes, if you watch his video, the video titled, Grace Cannot Possibly Mean the Unmerited Favor of God. Clyde keeps substituting the word unworthy. This is where I finally really saw the mistake, and I can articulate it, I think, better than I've been articulating it. He keeps substituting the word unworthy for unmerited. But these words are not interchangeable. He assumes that we believe that the definition of grace is favor given to unworthy people. I mean, yes, we are unworthy people, but that is incidental. Okay, there are two groups of people in the world, Christ and everyone else. Christ is worthy. We're all unworthy. But the definition of grace is not favor given to unworthy people, because this is where Clyde thinks that that's what we think the definition of grace is, or that is, I should say, the definition he inserts to try to make his case, favor given to unworthy people. We never said that. We never said that's what grace is. Grace is unmerited favor of God. It's the favor of God, not based upon merit. It's just incidental that it falls on unworthy people. But it also falls on Christ, and this is where Clyde makes a mistake. He looks at Christ and he says, well, Christ is worthy. Obviously, Christ is worthy. You people are saying grace is for unworthy people. Christ is worthy. Therefore, and this is the non sequitur, this is the logical lapse. Therefore, we must change the definition of grace because it doesn't work on Christ because Christ is worthy. The mistake is that Christ is incidentally worthy. We are incidentally unworthy. Grace doesn't care whether you're worthy or unworthy. And I've said this a million times. I'm going to say it again. Grace, like love, originates in God. This is like what you take the verse that says, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. But Clyde, misunderstanding things, says, you people are saying that rain just falls on the unjust. I thought, no, we didn't say that. But Clyde goes on in a headstrong manner. Well, it's falling on Christ. The rain is falling on Christ. You say it only falls on the unjust. I saw it falling on Christ. Christ is just. Therefore, I'm going to change the definition of rain. As absurd as that seems, that is exactly what's happening here. This is the damage done by a bait and switch. Substituting the word unworthy. The word unworthy does not belong anywhere near the definition of grace. It is not favor granted to unworthy people. It's the unmerited favor of God. It's the favor of God not based upon merit. It is given to unworthy people, yes, but that's only incidental. Because it's also given to Christ, the only worthy person. That's incidental. The thrust of the word is favor, and it comes from the heart and the mind of God, just like love, just like rain. Rain falls on the just and unjust. Love falls on the lovable and the unlovable. Grace is the favor of God that falls upon those who merit it and those who don't merit it. Those who would merit it if it were based on merit, Christ, and those who cannot possibly merit it, us. So that's the mistake. This is Clyde's deductive flaw, and I pray he can see it. Again, the mistake is thinking that grace is only for the unworthy. And again, if you watch that video, he keeps slipping the word unworthy in there. It's a bait and switch. That's not what we're saying. That's not what anybody is saying. But the concordance actually does say it in its definition, in the keyword concordance, and that needs to change. So the mistake is thinking the grace is only for the unworthy. No, it's only incidentally given to unworthy people. It's incidental. And when you think of it as only for the unworthy people, then it's a source of great confusion. Grace is not exclusively for unworthy people, because God also gives it to Christ. In Luke chapter 2, verse 40, this is the verse that set Clyde off. Christ is getting grace. You say grace is given to unworthy people. Christ is worthy. So grace can't mean favor given to the unworthy. It doesn't mean faith given to the unworthy. No one's saying that. We say over and over again, it's the unmerited favor of God. But as soon as Clyde starts pushing his agenda, he substitutes the word unworthy for unmerited. You see the difference? Unmerited speaks of what the favor is based on, not merit. Unworthy speaks of, here's some people who definitely don't deserve it. But these are two different things, aren't they? This is the mistake. So grace does not require anyone to be unworthy, but it sure as hell shows up spectacularly against those who are unworthy. But it doesn't require it. Just as it doesn't require someone to be worthy. That's why Christ doesn't get it based on worthiness. And that's the shock. But that's the fantastic revelation we have gotten out of this. That grace is so not based on worthiness that not even Jesus Christ gets it based on worthiness. That should make you feel like you can't possibly attain to it. Because Christ doesn't even attain to it. That is a revelation, ladies and gentlemen. And it also, this is a revelation of those who would foist a fantastic new teaching on us. Supposedly fantastic new teaching. Change the definition of grace, and Clyde's acolytes, his sycophants are all cheering like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Our man has found a new, exciting, cool, neato revelation. Awesome, super awesome. They're all excited about it. Non-critical. They're non-critical about it. You just don't. What man changes the definition of grace? I'm telling you, you better. If you're going to do something like that, you better have your ducks lined up and your pigeons and your buzzards and your geese and any other fowl you might have. You better have them lined up. It would help to send up some test balloons, not just throw it in front of your sycophants. You better test it, test it, test it. This was not tested. Because now it's being exposed. And I pray that Clyde sees the mistake he's making by throwing the word unworthy in there and saying grace is only for unworthy people. Nobody's saying that. Oh, Christ is worthy. Therefore, got to change the definition of grace. No. And let me do this now. Because I don't want to not have time for this. The Concordant Dictionary in the back needs to change the definition they put in the keyword concordance. It's like they're trying to be fancy. They're like Jerry Seinfeld in that one episode where he was put in charge of the music at the Christmas party or some kind of party. And the next year he wasn't trusted to be put in charge of the music. And he said, why can't I be in charge of the music? Well, you blew it last year. He said, I got jiggy with it. He got jiggy with it. That was his defense of his use of the music. He got jiggy. They didn't want him to get jiggy. We didn't want the Concordant to get jiggy with the definition of grace. This is what they say. A benefit bestowed on one who deserves the opposite. That is not the definition of grace. But I have mistakenly fallen into that. Over the years, I have. And in that same, under that same word grace, charis, they have this, again, I'll read it again, a benefit bestowed on one who deserves the opposite, and they have the entry of Luke 2:40, when grace is on Christ. So maybe Clyde was looking at this. This is the same mistake of saying that grace is for unworthy people. It is for unworthy people. It's not exclusively for unworthy people. Yes, it shows up spectacularly against unworthy people. And all the verses I read yesterday and all the verses I'm going to read today is for the spectacularness of grace as it shows up against unworthy people. It also is bestowed upon Christ, and it's not as spectacular when it's on Christ. It's not as spectacular. And it's just incidental that Christ is worthy. And it's incidental that we are unworthy. That doesn't touch the essence of grace, which is the favor of God that doesn't consider worthiness. Oh, I love this truth. And it's just springing up in great ways. It's just becoming more real to me, more real to you. And we're looking at contexts that where the grace, the favor of God, not based on merit, works in every single context now. Every single context, even the context where it applies to Christ. It's not based on merit. Don't care if you're talking about Christ or Saul the Pharisee. Not based on merit. Love that. Fits every context. Joy. Do you think joy fits every context? I'm going to be getting to Romans 5:20, where sin increases, joy super exceeds. Can you say unworkable? Can you say what man changes the definition of grace after 2,000 years? No man. Not on my watch. And I pray that those who look to Clyde as kind of their scriptural mad scientist who's in his laboratory finding new meanings of words and coming up with spectacular new revelations, such as there's a new kind of love found in Ephesians 5. There's only two letters. Did you realize that? I saw a recent video of Clyde's. I have accused him of, Clyde has eliminated half of Paul's letters because he's in the Acts 28 camp, right? I'm going to get back to this grace, believe me. Okay, but so Clyde's part of the Acts 28 camp where only half of Paul's letters apply to us. And Clyde protested that in a recent video. He says, some people are out there saying that I say only half of Paul's letters are for us. He says, that's not true. He said, I'm saying only two of Paul's letters are for us. And then he does that laugh. He does that kind of almost seems like a maniacal laugh. That's his latest position. Only two of Paul's letters are for us, Ephesians and Colossians. The rest of them, only two apply to us today. So I was giving him too much credit. And the rest of us were giving him too much credit. I pray that those who wait on Clyde's next big revelation will cause him to see that you're misdefining grace, Clyde. It's not exclusively favor given to unworthy people. It's not exclusively that. It does fall on people who are unworthy, but that's incidental. Because it also falls on Christ, who is extremely worthy. But not even he gets it based on his worthiness. That's how God-centered it is. I keep saying the same things. I try to say them in different ways so that maybe somebody who's not getting it, I'll say it a certain way and they'll go, okay, I got it, finally. I got it. Thank you, Martin. Okay, now, I implore Tony Nungesser of the Concordant Publishing Concern to change the definition on page 132 of the Concordant Dictionary. You can't put that anymore. You cannot put a benefit bestowed on one who deserves the opposite, because right under there you list Luke 2:40, where the grace of God was on the boy, Christ Jesus. Now, so according to you, he deserved the opposite. He deserved the opposite. See, it's not workable. It's a mistake. This is what you need to say. Grace is the favor of God, not based upon merit. Or if you want to say just the unmerited favor of God, that's okay. But I think unmerited, I think that could be more easily misused than not based upon merit. The favor of God, not based upon merit. That should be the definition of grace, written by the Concordant Publishing Concern on page 132. This is important. I think you can see, Tony, how important this is. And please, don't do what Clyde said. Clyde said in his video that you, maybe not you personally, Tony, but the Concordant Publishing Concern has decided to put a superscript joy next to grace. Don't do it. It's misleading. It's confusing. It causes people to think that grace means joy. It does not. If you're going to do that, then just go put the English equivalent of every single word next to it. And some of them are outrageous. As you know, I've given a list of completely unworkable English element words that cannot possibly be the definition of the Greek word they're standing for. It's the underlying base thought. It's part of a certain word family in the Greek, but it's not the definition. Do not change the scriptures. Do not change the version. And for God's sake, don't put joy for grace. Don't let Clyde talk you into that. It'd be a huge mistake. And don't put a superscript joy either. Just nix that idea. But you got to change this definition. Okay. Spending a lot of time on this because it is important. I left off, I think, in Romans 5:15. If I'm repeating myself, great. Let's go to Romans 5:15. Not as the offense, thus also the grace. Now we're talking about unworthy people, because that's when grace really shines. So we're talking about everybody now except Christ. We're talking about the people who are not worthy of this favor. If by the offense of one, no, verse 15, not as the offense, thus also the grace. For if by the offense of the one, the many died, much rather the grace of God and the gratuity in grace, which is of the one man, Jesus Christ, to the many superabounds. The point is that grace is being played against offense. Favor of God for offensive people. For offensive people. Wow. I can understand it on Christ, but now talking about offensive people, that's amazing. That's what grace is. The favor of God, not based upon offensiveness. I went to Romans 1:7 yesterday. That grace produces joy, but it also produces peace. Grace and peace to you. In Romans 3, Paul teaches on justification of faith. Justification by faith. Our faith given to us by God, that God declares us to be righteous, that justifies us before God. And we're justified. And only that can bring peace, which is why not until Romans 5 does Paul talk about having peace with God. You have to understand that you're justified before you can have peace with God. And you have to understand, therefore, grace, because it is by the grace of God that we're justified. It's by the grace of God that we're justified. And that's the source of our peace. So Romans 1:7, grace and peace to you from God our Father. This cannot be substituted with joy and peace. I don't care how great it sounds. I don't care what a lovely sentiment it is. It's not the scriptural translation. Grace and peace. And it makes perfect sense because it reflects Romans 3 and Romans 5. Grace, Romans 3, and peace, Romans 5. Paul knew what he was saying. He didn't want to say joy. If he wanted to, he had another Greek word at his disposal that means joy, with this chara. This is not chara. This is charis. Don't mix up these two words. What man mixes up chara and charis? No man. Not on my watch. John 1:17 says this. You know it well. For the law through Moses was given. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Wow, what are we contrasting grace with here? Law. What was law? That was the favor of God that was based on merit. It's this simple. Law was based upon merit. We saw how that worked out. Grace is not based upon merit. And that produces a peace and a joy. Yes, joy comes afterwards, after you understand it. Produces a peace and a joy that the law couldn't provide. We're contrasting law with grace here. How does joy fit here? For the law through Moses was given. Joy and truth came through Jesus Christ. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. But it's not the scripture. Doesn't matter if it sounds nice. Doesn't matter if it fits here. Doesn't matter. It's not the word of God. Joy doesn't tell us anything. There's no revelation there. Joy is an emotion. Emotions are nice, but they're not the engine. The engine provides the emotion. That's why an understanding of grace produces joy. That's why joy is part of the word family, because of how, what this truth produces. But the joy, the emotion, is not the engine, for Christ's sake. Clyde is wanting to make it the engine, not the engine. Let's go now to 2 Corinthians 9, 8. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8. Now God is able to lavish all grace on you, that having all contentment in everything always, you may be superabounding in every good work. This is where the good works follow the understanding that you're justified, that you're in good standing with God. It produces contentment, and it produces joy. So joy, contentment, and a following of works based on want to, not have to. These are the results of understanding that the grace of God is on you in spite of your behavior. Now, I told you I had three heavy hitters. Let's see if I can get to them all. I might have to go into detail on them tomorrow, but I do owe you to give them to you today. I said I would. I said I was going to do it yesterday, but Romans 11, 6. I've been here before, but if it is in grace, it is no longer out of works. Else the grace is coming to be no longer grace. Now, if it is out of works, it is no longer grace. Else the work is no longer work. How sublimely simple and eloquent can grace define itself? The word charis defines itself in this context. If it is in grace, it is no longer out of works. Grace and works. Merit-based versus not based upon merit. And that's it. You can't take away not based upon merit, or you destroy it. 2 Corinthians 12, 13. For is there anything in which you are discomfited above the rest of the ecclesias, except that I myself am not an encumbrance to you? Hang on, I know that sounds a little awkward, but listen to this. Deal graciously with me for this injustice. Paul is being facetious here, as if he committed an injustice, which he didn't. Starting again, for is there anything in which you are discomfited above the rest of the ecclesias, except that I myself am not an encumbrance to you? Deal graciously with me for this injustice. The point is, grace is being played against injustice. Deal joyously with me for this injustice. Makes no sense. Deal joyously with me? Again, Paul's being facetious. He did not do them an injustice, but as though he had, he said, what's the answer for a supposed injustice? Or let's say in this case, let's say it's an actual injustice. What's the answer for it? Joy. No, the answer is grace. Grace answers injustice. You see, this is definitive context. And again, that was 2 Corinthians 12, 13. And I got a killer verse from Luke 7. I'm not going to give you the verse. I'm sorry, that's a little cruel of me. I have the verse references here, but it's such a great definitive verse. But this one is really good. It's really good. But I think Luke 7 is even better. I'm spending time on this, and I'm going over it again and again to found you, to make sure you're founded, to make sure you are established in the grace of God and not blown about by every wind of teaching.